It's so good to be with you this morning. I'm gonna mostly see you blurry because I'm gonna wear my reading glasses so that we can have a clear sermon. So it's clear sermon, blurry people, but I think we can make do with that. Thank you, Amy. It's lovely to be here. As Amy said, my name is Hannah Snelling. My job at World Relief Western Washington is that I am the outreach manager. And what that really just means is that I work with churches and volunteers with my team. But one of the reasons I'm glad to be here today is to see what it is that the Lord has to share with us through this really powerful passage in Deuteronomy. Before we dive in, I want to say a little bit about what World Relief is so that you can kind of know who is this lady and why is she talking to us. World Relief works in the world with those experiencing forced displacement. And our mission at World Relief is to boldly engage the world's greatest crises in partnership with the church. That's the mission statement. Globally, what that means is that we work where people are being displaced. So we're in refugee camps, we're in countries where there's a lot of civil war or famine or things that are naturally displacing people. Which, as you can probably guess, means that yes, we have offices in Ukraine, for example, and South Sudan and places like that. And we're working there with people there and in neighboring countries of a lot of those places where a lot of refugees end up. And here, locally in the US, we welcome refugees and asylum seekers. And we help resettle them and start their lives in a new homeland. So perhaps you can kind of already see a little bit about how this ties into the passage that we heard this morning. So let's start there. In this passage in Deuteronomy 10:19, there's a command for us as believers. And at World Relief, we like to stand on this verse. This is a foundational verse for us. And it says this: that means you must also love immigrants, because you were immigrants in Egypt. So this is really our big idea here for the day. If you hear nothing else, I hope that you walk away hearing that loving immigrants among us is a biblical mandate for us as those who follow Christ. So let's dive deeper into this passage, because if it's a biblical mandate, we want to understand, okay, how and why and how can we do this well? The Israelites in this passage are receiving kind of their final sermons, really, from Moses. They've been wandering around for, a little while, like 40 years, and they're on the precipice of entering the long-awaited promised land. So let's talk about the Israelites. The Israelites at this point were a nomadic people. We kind of forget this about the Israelites because so much of what happens in their history happens kind of in the context of being a landed people, but really they were nomadic at the beginning. They descended from Abraham, who had left his homeland and settled in land that would later be the promised land. They were descended from Jacob, who had to flee his home due to famine. They were descended from Joseph, who was sold into slavery by his own brothers. They themselves were refugees fleeing persecution in Egypt and a genocidal pharaoh who had fought hard to end them as a people after years of abusing them as slaves. And now they were coming into their inheritance of the promised land. But the Lord it was is who made that land theirs. But other corrupt nations and were displaced and destroyed in this quest. The promised land itself, the very land itself, has an ancestry of foreigners. So, hearing this command to love the immigrant among you because you were once immigrants in this context, it kind of changes how we hear it a little bit, doesn't it? When the Lord declares that they must love the foreigner among you, we can assume that that means there's going to be foreigners among you, because the Lord doesn't give a command that just, dies off and is no longer applicable. He gives commands that are ongoing. So that means that we too then can assume that there will be immigrants or foreigners among us. And if that's the case, then we too must love the people among us. And throughout the passage, the Lord declares that he has chosen this nation from among all nations. His chosen people in the Old Testament were nomads until he brought them to the promised land. But then if we continue reading on in the New Testament, what happens to the Israelites? Oh, they get exiled. They come back to exile again. They had a hard time keeping a hold of the promised land. It was a tricky business for the nation of Israel. Well, his chosen people also in the New Testament were not from one place. With his saving death on the cross, Jesus invited all nations into belonging as his people. The truth is this: what made people groups belong to the Lord was not where they were from, but to whom they belonged, the one who chose them and who chooses us, which is why this is still true for us today. We do not belong to the land or our nation first. We belong to the Lord first, who has chosen us, and he asks us to love the immigrants among us. So, if loving the immigrant among us is a biblical mandate, what does that mean for us right here in Western Washington in 25? I'd like to point out three lessons for us to learn this morning. The first is this: one of the greatest crises today is forced displacement. Remember, I said that World Relief engages in the world's greatest crises. We believe that forced displacement is that greatest crisis. And so it's our call then to be the light in the dark places. And forced displacement is a big one. It's a big, big place. Right now, the UN just published new numbers. There are 117.3 million people who have been forced to flee their homes right now in the world. 117.3 million. Who makes up that? Of those, 42.5 million are refugees. Here's the part where I help us understand what the difference is between these different names for people. Refugees, by definition, are people who have been forced to flee their homeland due to a well-founded fear of persecution. They've crossed an international border, and most are living in a refugee camp or an urban center awaiting a country to accept them to live. So 42.5 of the 117.3 are refugees. 67.8 million are what we call IDPs, internally displaced persons. IDPs are people who've been forced to flee, but they're still in their home country. So we're seeing a lot of this in South Sudan recently in the news. There was quite a bit to do with Al-Fashar, which is a town there that doesn't exist anymore. It was destroyed by the civil unrest there, and all of the people who lived there, they're not there. They can't live there because it is just a destroyed war zone. And so they're still in South Sudan, but they're no longer at home. Internally displaced persons. And only 8.42 million of that 117.3 are what we call asylum seekers. There's actually a difference between an asylum seeker and a refugee. This is what it is. A refugee and an asylum seeker are forced to flee due to a well-founded fear of persecution, and they've crossed an international border. So, totally the same up to this point. The difference is that an asylum seeker proceeds directly to a border of the land in which they want to settle and asks for asylum. That's it. That's the whole difference. So, there are 8.42 million asylum seekers globally. So it's hard to think about what that 117.3 million means. Well, it means this: one in every 70 people on earth, not one in 100, one in 70 have been forced to flee. Let that sink in. It's a really big number. At World Relief Western Washington, we exist to help the refugee, asylum seeker, and immigrant among us just right here in King County and beyond. So perhaps you're wondering, well, what does that mean? How do you help them today, especially in this current climate? So let's talk a little bit about it. Let's name some of the elephants in the room. Certainly, everything has changed this year in terms of the US's policies for the refugee resettlement program and for asylum seekers. So let's talk about the state of refugees in the US today. Well, here's the state of refugees. There's not new ones coming. The refugee resettlement program was closed in late January of this year, and no refugees have entered since, with very, very small exceptions. This next year, so the government year starts in October because that's when a new year begins, but that's when the new year begins for the government. And we expect in this next fiscal year that we will see a very small number. The government has told us to expect this of refugees coming in, and they will primarily be from one people group. We also expect to see, however, kind of an refugee adjacent type person come in. We expect to see between 12 and 20,000 in the United States total come in of people who are Afghan SIVs. SIV stands for Special Immigrant Visa. So you receive a special immigrant visa if you have served the US in some way. That's why they're all Afghani, because these are all people who served our government in some way during the very long war that we had in Afghanistan, and they can no longer live in Afghanistan or their life will be forfeit. And so a lot of them are in Turkey, Iran, Pakistan, Oman, kind of neighboring areas, and they've been living in that kind of limbo state, but they have a visa. And the US has said that they're going to issue more of these visas this year. And we expect to see 12 to 20,000 enter the United States total, not here, total. And that seems a little bit like a big number, but is actually a very small number. We expect to have the privilege of reselling about 200 of those special immigrant visa holders here in Western Washington. That's what's coming up for us this year in terms of refugees. Well, let's also talk about asylum seekers. Oh, asylum seekers, lots about them in the news, isn't there? Well, World Relief has a partnership with our state. Washington State has a special program. So it changes by state. So what I will tell you this morning about asylum seekers is different in California, is different in New York, is very different in Texas. But in Washington, we have a statewide program that is really wonderful. And it basically came out of this idea of our actual elected government officials here in Washington saying, hey, what if we offered asylum seekers the same level of assistance that refugees are offered? Would that help? Would that help our society? And would that help them? And the answer that they discovered during the pilot program was, yeah, of course. Of course that will help. And so World Relief partners with the state, along with several other refugee resettlement agencies, to run this program. And it's wonderful. It's case management and resettlement, and it helps asylees adjust to life here. So while there are no new asylum seekers entering the country because the borders are closed to asylum seekers, there are people here who have already been here seeking asylum who are awaiting a court date. I just spoke with someone recently who was telling me that their good friends who are from Venezuela have a court date. It's in June of 2028.
Oh my gosh.
And that is not unusual. Our immigrations are crazy, crazy backed up. So, when immigration completely changed in January of this year, some people thought, oh, are you all going to lose your jobs? World Relief's going to close, right? But actually, that's far from true. The ongoing work of helping people not only initially settle, but truly feel that they belong in our community is a long game. Of the nearly 10,000 people that were helped in 2024 here in Western Washington, only 16% were newly arrived refugees. 84% of the people that we helped in 2024 were not new arrivals. And that's a pretty normal average for us in terms of the work that we do. So, right now, what we like to say is that everything just got harder, but people need us more than ever. And here are some ways that we're helping immigrants. We have a lot of programs that run that are designed to help immigrants in our country. We have ESL so that people can learn English. Really hard to move forward and get promotions at work and better jobs if you can't speak English in the United States. So, we have ESL services. We also have employment services. We have an entire team of people, and they are devoted 24/7 to helping immigrants get jobs. They do job training, they do resume readiness, they explain differences in cultures so you can understand how to succeed in the American workplace, which is very different than most of the countries that they're coming from. And also, we have relationships with many businesses and organizations, and we're able to help them literally find a job. We have a big contract with the Port of Seattle. So when you are at the airport and you are hearing people speak in a different language, and they're directing, your airplane to come in, or they're, doing something in baggage claim, be nice to them because we know them. So that's what employment services does. We also have an immigration legal services department. It's pretty high demand right now to have legal services available for our immigrant brothers and sisters. And our department is really wonderful at assisting them. We also have a children and family department that helps people who have come to the United States who have children. Our executive director in Western Washington is originally from the country of Chad. He and his wife moved here in the very early 2000s and have been citizens for over 10 years. Well, their children were all born here in the US. Actually, he tells about how when his wife first arrived, she was like 6 months pregnant already. And so they came, they did not speak English at the time. And now, of course, they're both fluent and they're really wonderful people. Well, his oldest son has just started college this year at Whitworth, my alma mater. And he tells a really funny story about how 2 years ago, after living in the United States for nearly 20 years, he learned what homecoming is. He'd never known. Because why would he? He didn't have homecoming growing up. It was not a word that he knew or, understood. And he talked about how it was, his son was like fretting about, well, what do I wear? What's the right clothes to wear? And he had literally no advice to give him because he didn't know if he should tell him to wear his cool jeans or, nice dress pants or what the cool thing to wear was. So it was a learning experience for him. Well, Madar, our executive director, had experienced those things for 18 years. His younger children are reaping the benefit because now dad knows. But imagine if you were in that situation, if you moved with your very young child to a foreign country and put them in school. How would you know how to help them succeed? How would you know what was expected or what the norms were? Our Children and Families Department works a lot with families and helps them in those situations. It's really beautiful work. We have a housing stabilization team that helps people attain permanent housing. And we also have a team called Resiliency, and they have several programs that they do all in partnership with churches that help people go from surviving to flourishing here in the United States. And I want to tell you a short story about one of them. One of the programs is a sewing class. And the church that runs the sewing class does two cohorts a year, and there are nine students in each cohort. And there are 10 volunteers per cohort. So there's a master sewer who's at the sewing machine showing the example, and every woman in the class has her own personal volunteer to help her. That is how many women in that church are phenomenal sewers and experts that they have enough that they can like rotate out and have all these volunteers. Well, there was a young woman, a young married woman from Afghanistan, who recently completed this program. And she was telling one of our staff members that before the program, she was very depressed. She wanted to go home. She did not want to stay. And it was because she was so alone. Her husband went off to work every day and she sat alone in their department and she felt isolated and she was scared to go out, scared to get lost, scared to be, have things said to her that were unkind, and she didn't know the language very well. But she got the call that she had gotten a place in the sewing program and she learned how to take the bus with no fear to get herself to the sewing program. We helped her learn how to take the bus. And she then found community with the other women in the group, not just those who were also from Afghanistan, but the volunteers. And she said she found great independence and community and a sense of belonging. And at the end of the class, she said that her heart is filled with joy and she's so happy to be in her new home. That's what resiliency does. But this work that I've just described is not work that we do alone. As I mentioned earlier, World Relief engages in this work in partnership with the church. World Relief actually started a little over 80 years ago in the aftermath of World War II, and it was started by a group of people in a church just like you who saw on the news footage of people in Europe who had no homes and nothing. They just had nothing. And they were, of course, forcibly displaced, and they said, "We need to help." And they started helping. That is how World Relief started. And so the church has always been very central to the mission of World Relief because we, as a community of believers, are called to be the light shining in the darkness together. A second lesson that I want to draw us to this morning is this. Often, when the Lord is working good change into our hearts, it's uncomfortable. I know this church has a long tradition of welcoming and caring for the immigrant, and I was really moved by the hymns this morning. And so it's fun to get together with a community of people who I know have the heart for immigrants. But in our country today, immigration can be a really uncomfortable topic. Am I wrong? Do you all feel really comfortable with it? We don't want to talk about it unless we know we're among like-minded friends and family and coworkers. Our screens, no matter which screen you're looking at, they're full of political rhetoric and stories in the media that are often jarring and confrontational. And we all find ourselves in situations where we just don't want to speak up. Well, I want to encourage all of you with the verse from our passage today, verse 16. We heard this morning the Common English Bible translation that said, "So circumcise your hearts and stop being so stubborn." The New Living Translation puts it this way, "Change your hearts and stop being stubborn." But I really like how Eugene Peterson puts it in the Message paraphrase. He says, "Cut away the thick calluses from your heart and stop being so willfully hard-headed." He doesn't mince words, does he? We must model for our friends and family and neighbors a willingness to change the story about immigration. We don't have to be confrontational. But here's the truth: immigration is an issue, sure, but immigrants are people. They're our brothers and sisters, many of whom have endured unbearable circumstances to get here today, just like we heard in little Adriana's story. They've experienced violence, persecution, loss of family members, loss of home, loss of their entire community, and they can't go home. It's not a political issue. It's a biblical story and a biblical issue for us as believers. So my encouragement to you is when you feel uncomfortable, lean in. Lean in to the awkward and uncomfortable and humbly share why you care for immigrants and why the Lord loves the immigrant among us. And that brings us to our final lesson, which is this: the Lord loves the foreigner. Story after story after story in scripture illustrate this for us. The Lord brings in a foreigner or a refugee, and he completely flips the script. I won't tell you the stories of all of these, but I will give you a little list. And this is not a complete list. Abraham, Hagar, Joseph, Moses, Rahab, Ruth, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel. It doesn't stop in the Old Testament. The Samaritan woman, the Good Samaritan in the story that Jesus tells, using the foreigner as the hero in the story, actually acting out God's will. How about the centurion who comes to Jesus begging for the life of his young daughter who's dying? Even Jesus, Mary, and Joseph were themselves foreigners and refugees in Egypt. Well, the Lord is still doing this today. He's still sewing together his beautiful patchwork quilts of cultures and peoples in this world who all ultimately belong to him. Loving the foreigner among us gives us a taste of the heavenly celebration that we are bound for right here at home. Last week, I had the privilege of attending Refugee Thanksgiving in Olympia. It was a program that our Olympia office put on where we gathered church members like yourselves and who have formed strong bonds with refugee families that they have helped World Relief resettle there. It was a potluck of multicultural proportions. Sure, there were Thanksgiving items, turkey, mashed potatoes, stuffing, but there were also tacos and halal meals and spices from around the world. It was also a multilingual night. So many languages spoken around every table, but everyone understanding one another through the universal language of good food and fellowship. And it ended with a big dance party where everyone learned a traditional Afghan wedding dance, laughing together, the joy abundant. That's what heaven looks like to me. No barriers between us, just all of us gathered together, laughing, dancing, and singing before the Lord. The Lord loves the foreigner because none of us are foreigners in his kingdom. All of us belong to him. I'd like to finish by reading Deuteronomy 10:21 for us. He is your praise and he is your God, the one who performed these great and awesome acts that you have witnessed with your very own eyes. May it be so among us, friends, that we witness the great and awesome acts of the Lord as we welcome our new neighbors with his love. Amen.